This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. Bluehost offers unbeatable value whenever you want to start your own website or blog or forum or whatever you want to do online. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited bandwidth and storage space, you get a .com domain name, and you get a one-click installation, I think it's the best feature of what they offer, of a WordPress blog, so no technical hassle either. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website, onceuponatime.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
I owe you nothing. Well, I owe none of you anything. And some of you owe me. So yeah, just know. Oh, and point of interest, the driver, he saw me throwing some magic. So instead of trying to get him out of here, you better be hoping he dies. Because if he doesn't, he's going to be driving tour buses up and down Main Street.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our almost weekly podcast dedicated to this great ABC series currently in its second season. And we are analyzing the episode and try to, well, predict what's going to happen. And also, the most important thing of what we do is we try to uncover all the layers in the story. And in today's episode, there are going to be a lot of those layers. We're going to talk about In the Name of the Brother. And we have, I think, one of the biggest panels that we've ever assembled. And perhaps that's for a good reason, because this is a very dense episode with lots of things going on. So the more expertise we can bring in, the better it is. Joining us is a very sleep-deprived new daddy, David Handlos. David.
Hey, Father.
Are you awake?
I don't even know.
Ah, poor you. It's... it's great that you still were able to make it, and we're looking forward to your theories and your input. I was trying to say something intelligent about fatherhood, but I don't know anything about that. Also joining us,
neither do I. No worries.
Also joining us, Deborah. You already heard her in the background. Hey, Deborah.
Hi.
Our resident Disney expert, and also joining us, our producer Inga Lotz. Welcome
Hello.
To the show. You did a lot of preparation as usual, and so instead of me just reading your notes, it's a lot better that we just bring you in and you join us with your expertise. And also joining us all the way from Texas, Shelley and Lisa, in the same room but on different computers.
Yeah, sorry for all the technical difficulties this morning, Father.
Well, you know, the good thing about podcasting is the listeners have no idea what we just went through. It's all washed away with a swift of the, you know, magic wand. There's nothing left. All the memories of that are erased, as if we just stepped over this red line on the ground. Anyway, speaking of which, that is where we pick up the story again in Storybrooke. With remember, we had that that car arriving from the outside. There's a stranger in the car. We don't know who it is, but we know that he bumps into Hook, almost killing him, at least causing a few broken ribs. And Hook, in turn, was also trying to kill the crocodile, a.k.a. Mr. Gold. And so a lot of wounded people, a big emergency situation in the middle of the night. And out of nowhere, we have a police car and an ambulance. And yeah. The first question I was asking myself was, how did they know what happened? Did they have cameras?
Yeah, how did they get there so fast?
OnStar?
What did you say?
OnStar.
I don't know. Everything
it was magic. Emma just had a feeling.
It was either magic or it was just a 911 call.
Or maybe Red was out running around.
Oh, she's fast. That's true. That's true. Yeah. Anyway, but... the stranger, of course, we get there's a very dramatic, almost second killing of Hook by Mr. Gold, and then Emma arrives and the ambulance arrives, and they decide to first show us who is in the car, and it is someone we don't know yet, and he is called what's his name again?
Greg Mendel.
So he's the stranger, the unknown person, the outsider, And, well, his identity, we're going to discuss that later on in the show, of course, who it could be and where he could be from. But what we do know is that he's hurt and he needs to be brought to the hospital. And so is Hook. And we see a slightly cruel side of Emma there, who is just pressing some ribs to keep him under control there. And, of course, everybody is panicking because if it is now possible that someone from the outside can enter Storybrooke, it means that the entire world can now know about their secret, which is, of course, the existence of a fairy tale land. And here is a sound clip about that.
So, whatever's kept random people from stumbling into Storybrooke for the last 28 years...
It's gone. Anyone could drive in. Why are my instincts telling me that's a bad thing?
Because you've seen E.T. or Splash or any other movie where they find something magical and study it to death. I think what they do to a werewolf...
Oh, and his friends and family, they're going to come looking for him soon.
Let's try not to overreact.
Leroy's right. We don't need outsiders here.
Hook says he doesn't know where Cora is, and God knows what she's going to do.
All right. That's the first reference of many others to films from the 80s, starting with Splash and E.T.
But notice the Star Wars ringtone.
We'll talk about the Star Wars ringtone later on. But first, let's talk about Splash and E.T. Do you think there's any, you know, additional reason for them to mention specifically these two ones?
Splash.
Go ahead, Deborah.
I was going to say Splash was owned by, I want to say, one of the Disney affiliates. So it's like either Miramax or Touchstone, but there's one, like at Walt Disney World, there is one Splash reference. There's probably, I don't know about E.T. cause that's more of a universal thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking that maybe it was the whole idea that those two movies are owned by the same company, but they're not.
I thought the E.T. was kind of a nod to Spielberg. Spielberg and Lucas had worked on many different things, and clearly they're fans of Star Wars. Every week we've got some little Star Wars reference in there. So I kind of got that as a nod to Spielberg.
Absolutely. I was also thinking of, Splash is about, it's an old movie, and I think I've only seen it once, but it was years and years and years ago. Isn't it about a mermaid?
Yes.
So I was immediately thinking Little Mermaid. Ooh.
Right. Maybe you're hoping for some Ariel there.
Under the sea.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's an odd one, though, because who has seen Splash in the last, 20, 25 years? Who's watched it?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking, Lisa, is that it's possibly, or Shelley, I don't know who I'm talking to.
It was Lisa.
Okay.
But we sound alike.
Yeah. That one of the things is, how long have they been in Storybrooke? 28 years? Those movies came out before the curse.
Mm.
So their movie references are just about right in line with the time freeze.
That's possible. And the library is open, so perhaps they found some books about those movies.
But if nothing's come in, then everything in the library is dated.
Maybe they've been watching a lot of Netflix in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm betting they don't have Kindles.
That's probably it. They've been just catching up.
But they have internet because Henry in the pilot used the credit card and logged in. And remember, Emma came back and she logged in and looked at his internet history and found the... What was it? Who's Your Mama? However it was, he was tracking down. However he tracked down Emma.
I was very intrigued by the reference to E.T., especially because we get the reference to Star Wars later on as well. I was thinking, could this be another hint at all these different realities? And could we get a season full of aliens in the future of Once Upon a Time? I mean, why not?
You're just hoping.
Of course I'm hoping.
No, but you laugh, and at the end, well, not jumping too far ahead, but when Henry says Frankenstein isn't a fairy tale.
Right,
there's
exactly.
There's other stories here. And so why not? We could, I guess they're kind of saying to us, even with last week's episode title, The Outsider, they're kind of saying to us, we can bring in anything we want. You guys have no idea.
Well, and the most interesting aspect is that these references to other stories or other franchises, in the case of Star Wars and E.T., happens in conjunction or somehow it's related to this, to Greg Mendel, to this new character. So I was like, okay, so we've got E.T. here. We've got his Star Wars ringtone could he be a science fiction character? Perhaps I'm. Let's talk about that Star Wars ringtone. Is there more to it? Is it just a little inside joke because Disney just acquired the Star Wars franchise and they wanted
it's
to Luke just
Skywalker.
Well,
and her is Leia.
That was it. That was actually what I was thinking right away. It's like
I don't think
and
so.
Mendo,
no, me neither. I don't
Mendo
think it's
and the whole. Well, are we talking about who Mendel was? Because
yeah,
tell me everybody knew Greg Mendel when they said the name.
Yes, me. I was like the monk with the peas.
Yes,
the father of genetics.
Right.
In the name of the brother, mm-hmm. everything. And this whole episode was father-son relationship, brother to brother, sibling. I mean,
oh, that could mean life. Brother
course,
could refer to
Mendel
the identity as well.
Yeah. Gregor Mendel was a brother.
Yes.
He was a Catholic Augustinian monk.
Right. Yep. And I didn't realize this, but he wasn't really recognized for his scientific work until after his death.
His death.
Mm-hmm. I thought that fit really well in with Frankenstein. There's got to be a tie.
I was thinking, and this is a far-fetched thing, but the whole peas is that he might be from The Princess and the Pea.
Could be.
That's
We've been
a
talking
stretch.
About that
I mean,
in a while.
I know, but you know, her could be the princess from Princess and the Pea.
Oh.
They could all be storybook characters.
Is he a storybook character or is he just an average Joe? I mean, which way are they going to go with it? Are they going to go with the whole splash ET where strangers are going to start pouring into Storybrook to figure out what's going on? Or is he somebody?
I think that at least in the way that they're setting it up, they are suggesting they're hinting at a big change and that they're going to bring in other stories and start it with Frankenstein. But we only got a hint of that earlier on, but now it's a full-fledged, you know, we are there. It's like an entire, like half of this episode is in black and white. So I think that's we've crossed the threshold. And now, from now on, we can expect other, you know, story realities to blend in. There's also a lot of talk about Mendel being a wizard from the Wizard of Oz, one of the wizards. I think that that first pop. I didn't even know this character. What was his name again? I've looked it up somewhere.
Are you talking about the Wizard of Oz?
Yes, I think so. Gosh, I got a lot of windows open as usual, and then I always forget where I saw something. So it's basically a bit of a skeptical, double-sided wizard. Let's see, Professor Marvel of the Wizard of Oz. I've never heard
Marvel?
Of Marvel. Marvel, yeah.
Marvel.
Me, it's in Marvel comics.
Oh, Marvel is also a Disney franchise.
Marvel was the professor in the wooden wagon that.
In Kansas?
In Kansas. Dorothy meets him, and he's doing the whole crystal ball, but really she's got her eyes closed, and he's going through her bag and finds the picture, and then he tells her, I see a woman and a farm.
So you're referring to a crystal ball. Since we're in full-fledged speculation drive, we see a crystal ball in this episode.
Yeah, that was strange.
And it's been given to Mr. Gold, Rumpelstiltskin, to find back his son, and it has the needle on top of it from well, at least it refers, of course, to the story of
Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty. So could this guy be Marvel? Could that crystal ball be his? And could her be Cora?
No.
No,
I think it's going to be somebody.
No deliberation, just no.
since we are talking about Oz, did you catch the other Oz reference in this episode?
No.
When Ruby and Dr. Will are talking about his past, they are sitting on a road which has yellow bricks.
I missed that too.
A yellow brick pavement.
Yes, that's true. They're sitting on a. I was struck by the colors. There's this red thing in the harbor and a yellow. Yeah, they're sitting on a yellow ledge. But that could be true. That could be a direct reference to The Wizard of Oz. There's another reference to a Disney fairy tale, or at least a Disneyfied fairy tale. When they enter a Storybrooke, the shot lingers on a, I guess it's a pub or something. It's called the Rabbit Hole. Did you notice that?
Yeah, out of the rabbit hole, something like that.
No, it's just called the Rabbit Hole, which of course is a direct reference to Alice in Wonderland.
Wonderland. But if we remember, one in season one, I don't know the exact context, but they were looking for someone. I think they were looking for David when he was walked off the hospital to the toll bridge. And then there was someone who opened the door in this jacket, and he was carrying a carrot. So I was like, "Oh, that's the rabbit from Wonderland."
Mm-hmm.
So they weave it in Storybrooke on occasion.
Yeah, it could just that they're kind of making fun of us, and sometimes these hints are just there to like a red herring. And it's not leading to anything. It's just like the license plate on the car of the outsider. I mean, the theories have just multiplied over the last 2 weeks online, and it's just hard to follow. People are doing like entire mathematical calculations to figure out what it could mean. It's crazy. And perhaps it means nothing. Perhaps it's just a joke. What I was thinking was that her on the cell phone, I was thinking what they want us to believe is that it is a woman, and that so that her refers to a woman. But what if it's an acronym? And it refers to H-E-R. And I wish I'd know what H-E-R could stand for, but I was thinking, it's kind of weird to put someone in your phone, in your contact list, and just put their H-E-R. It doesn't make sense.
Is it a mistress?
Even that Hermione? Would make sense. You would just Hermione.
If it was a mistress, that'd be even more of a red flag, you know, wouldn't it?
Why?
Or your mother-in-law?
Okay, I get 4,000 calls from her. What the?
Well, there you go. That would be very imprudent. That wouldn't be the best thing to do. So I'm thinking H-E-R is an acronym, and it's an abbreviation of something. But I don't know who it could be.
But it's the Imperial March it's playing, right?
No. It's just a Star Wars theme.
Oh, okay.
So it's not Darth Vader. It's not Anakin Skywalker.
It wasn't Princess Leia's theme or anything.
No, but it is Star Wars. So this could be a reference to the fact that Disney just acquired Star Wars. However, I found another explanation for this. The writer of this episode is, it must be tab number 55 open on my desk here. This episode is written by Jane Espenson.
She's
done a lot of episodes. Actually, she was also a writer for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Battlestar Galactica and Caprica. I think she was a producer of Caprica, so she has a big science fiction background.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones as well. Okay, I missed that. But the episode was directed by Milan Chaylov, who's a Canadian director. And a former actor. Now, he did, in his younger years, voice-over work for a game called Star Wars Droids. So he must be a Star Wars fan. So it could be just that. It could just be that the director is a Star Wars geek and he wanted to, you know, have some fun with Star Wars.
Well, and I've listened to the... when you get the DVD sets and you watch the episodes and they have the director or the writer or one of the actors talking in the background, Jane has said how much she likes throwing in little... nods to different things, like when Mo French was driving the truck and it said Game of Thorns.
Yes.
And that was a play on the Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense if she threw in all these little references as nods to different stories or different franchises.
Yeah, it could be just that. Anyway, we'll know hopefully in a couple of weeks when I hope they're not leaving us guessing about the identity of the stranger for too long. But we'll see if this has anything to do with Star Wars or not.
I have to stop you there. The stranger was August. This is the outsider.
Oh, the outsider.
Outsider.
Okay.
Yeah.
outsider. But
I'd expect this guy to stick around for at least a little bit, though. I mean, I recognize that actor from he's one of those actors who's been, hey, it's that guy who's been in a bunch of different movies. Mm-hmm. So that usually means that they'll stick around for a couple episodes.
Oh yeah, I think so. And I mean, he is really bringing a new reality into Storybrooke and into the story itself. So I think he's going to be quite pivotal in for at least for this season. And I really feel that we're on the verge of something, you know, like a big twist in the story. And when we will talk about the promo for the next episode, actually, that's confirmed that there's something big is going to happen, or a big change at least. So it could have to do with this this whole new dimension. I'm still really intrigued by this the reference to if this is a deliberate reference to Gregor Mendel. I still don't know exactly why they would do that, because that is not someone from a story or from a fairy tale or anything. So,
no, but he's German, and the whole Frankenstein episode seems to be set in a Bismarck era Germany, late 1800s, 1870s.
Gregor Mendel is from Silesia.
Mm-hmm.
So he's modern day Czech Republic.
Yeah, it's like Austria, Hungary, that area. Yeah. But anyway,
it's just a nod. I have a text from my husband that says my son thinks that the stranger is Bay.
Oh, Bay.
So I don't know, because it showed Bay is on the East Coast somewhere.
How ironic would that be if Mr. Gold leaves the town with Emma on this wild goose hunt for many episodes, and then it turns out that his son was there all along.
Right.
I'm not sure
that'd be interesting. But if that's true, I mean that Cora bartered with him for a truce to get that globe so he could find Bay. If that globe is really that inaccurate, he should get his money back.
Well, but don't you think it's suspicious that Cora just happens to turn up with the one thing that'll get him out of town? Because if you think about it, who else? She wants to take over with Regina, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who else has power in Storybrooke? It's Gold. So doesn't it really make sense for her to do whatever she can just to get Gold to leave?
Yeah.
So he can't interrupt her plans.
Could
so
be a
who
trick.
Knows if it's real or not?
Could be a trick.
That whole interaction with Cora was just
strange.
Well, if we're going to move on to Cora for a few minutes, she was really only in those two major scenes. She was in there with Gold in the shop, and then she was with Regina down in the little secret hiding place in the vault behind.
Well, little? Her. It was huge. It was like an entire palace in a graveyard.
She was hiding behind the mirror, in the mirror, I think we were supposed to think, but she opened a door. Nobody seems very alarmed about Cora. No, I really haven't had very much response to the whole, oh my gosh, guys, Cora's in Storybrooke. What are we going to do?
Let's freak out a little more.
Well, let's listen to a clip of the confrontation between Regina and Cora and see if we can figure out what she's up to.
You framed me for the cricket temporarily so you could see what these people really think of you.
You made an airtight case. Anyone would believe it.
I didn't want you to reject me. Not again.
You wanted me broken.
Receptive.
You were the most manipulative.
No. I won't even argue. Come with me. We're going to town. It's the middle of the night.
I don't care. We'll wake them up. Emma and Henry and the two idiots, and you can tell them how you lied. You owe me that.
And then you'll let us start over.
I don't see that happening, Mother.
Regina is heartbroken. There are tears, but are they real tears when it comes to Cora, or is she just playing Regina here? Is she really looking for that one person that still loves her, as she tells Rumpelstiltskin, or is she just faking it and is the only thing that she actually really wants is power, and Regina is just, as she's always been, a tool for Cora? To get that power?
That's a huge question. And that Lisa and I were talking about that earlier. I don't know what's motivating Cora. And until we see the future episode that we know is coming in, oh, probably 4 or 5 weeks, mm-hmm. that will give us a little more backstory on Cora and Rumpel, and I'm really looking forward to it. What's motivating Cora? I don't trust her. I don't believe her. I've seen her manipulate too many times very easily. I mean, look what she did to young Snow to get her to fess up about Daniel. It's just, it's fascinating because here you almost think this is what she wants. But Lisa's right. She's getting Gold out of town for a reason. And she wanted Regina broken. And she may say receptive, but we know it's broken. But love is powerful, and I do think she loves Regina. I really do think that Cora and Rumpel, whatever their interaction is going to be, Rumpel tried to use Cora to break or to enact the curse. And then when she wouldn't kill Regina, because it's got to be the thing you love most, when she wouldn't kill Regina for the curse, he took Regina to maybe to hurt Cora. And turned her into the thing that he could use to break or to enact the curse and bring him here. And she referenced that when they had their little interaction. She said to him, oh, "What was it?" That he says, "What do you want?" And she says, "I want you to let Regina go." You know, it was very, very. How was it? She said, "You were so clever to get her to lay the curse, so you could come here. Mm-hmm. You don't need her anymore. Let me try to get her back. Let us live." The whole episode was on life.
Yes.
Everything was about yes. life. And we could go into the morality of it or the mm-hmm. irony that it aired on this week.
Mm-hmm. There's this big march for life in Washington. And yeah, it's a huge theme. And it's also about what is life ultimately about? I mean, what fuels life? Is it hatred? Is it vengeance? Or is it love? And what leads to what? But it's confusing to see someone who is so obviously evil like Cora, manipulating everyone, with at the same time, you know, how much love is there really? Isn't her heart completely gone?
It's not
technically
in her.
Her heart is like two worlds away or something at this point. So.
Which, by the way, was very confusing overall. It's like the whole deal with the hearts, and then the brother of Dr. Will or Frankenstein getting Regina's heart, and like, what? Where does that come from?
That was a couple of episodes ago when they revealed that Dr. Will was Frankenstein. So they went down to a vault, and he could pick a heart, mm-hmm. and it was Cora's vault. And at I think Regina's home palace or mm-hmm. home mansion, and then there was this question, whose heart is it? And then she said, I don't know. There are so many. She killed so many. So we lost track of it. So I don't think anyone knows whose heart he has.
Oh, I was thinking that they were suggesting that it was actually Regina's heart, so that Regina also stored her heart there.
No, that was the episode where Rumpelstiltskin broke Regina so that she would be receptive to learn how to take a heart and be evil as her mother.
That's why I was so confused. I was like, at what point? Did I miss something? Did I skip an episode? But there was also another scene where I was a bit confused, where Hook is at the hospital and he's hooked up to a heart monitor and it's beeping. How is that possible? Because we know that Hook's heart is not in his body, right? He took it out.
It is.
Oh, it is.
No, he left his.
He has a heart. Yeah.
Oh, he has a heart. Oh, so Cora doesn't have a heart. Okay, that clears everything up. Yeah. I mean, I get really confused. There's so many of these story threads now. And
Regina enchanted Hook mm-hmm. to rip out Cora's heart, but then they discovered mm-hmm. that Cora didn't have a heart anymore, so he
right.
kept the enchantment and ripped out... was it Aurora's heart?
Okay. Yes. So what to think about the kiss between Cora and
yes.
Rumpelstiltskin?
Oh, creepy.
Very creepy.
they were saying, well, let's seal the deal like we used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she called him master.
Yes. And I was like, does it mean that maybe Rumpelstiltskin is Regina's father instead of...
I think it's going to be the Miller's daughter. I think
this suggests they have this huge backstory that we're about to find out. And it is, I agree with that it's going to be with Deborah, with that it's going to be the Miller's daughter story. And yes, that makes it interesting. So is Regina the baby from the Miller's daughter?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Probably. Probably.
And but that would mean Rumpel took the baby, but Rumpel didn't raise her.
So. No, but maybe Cora is the baby.
I don't know.
Well, no, remember
Cora
when...
Cora is the baby that Rumpel took.
Then why is she kissing him?
Because he raised her as maybe she was like a servant. I mean, she calls him master.
Remember that
I
little...
I think it all goes back
Let's listen to Deborah's theory about this.
Sorry, Deborah.
No, I was just going to say, remember the little blip, like, I don't know if it was this season or last season, where it was like the first time I met you, you were travel size. You were a little more travel size, what he said to Regina.
Yes.
And Daniel did say to Regina, she was a Miller's daughter.
Yes.
She was the daughter of a Miller.
Okay.
My question is, didn't he train her up in the ways of the magic?
Yes.
So I wonder if she came, maybe she's the kid from Miller's daughter, or, you know, she came to him and he basically brought her up as an apprentice.
That's my understanding, yes. That's why she calls him master, because there's the master and the apprentice.
And then they probably developed a relationship in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. There was a lot of, like, going, ooh, in my house.
Yes. And so, what about Bale's mother? Who is that again?
Mila.
Oh, no, that's Mila. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so... Rumpelstiltskin actually might have had an affair before or during that, or during that relationship, or before that.
I'd say that was that. That must have been after, because well after, because, you know, Rumpelstiltskin's been around for, you know, hundreds of years, and I'm assuming, he taught Cora how to use magic. I'm assuming he tried to get her to do the, you know, enact the curse, but that never worked out. So he tried to do the same thing with her daughter. So that's
right.
He's probably just been working this angle for years.
Yeah, I think that when we get in the first season, Rumpel's background story, doesn't he kill the Dark One because he wants to protect his son for the Ogre Wars? And at that point, is Milan already gone? So this whole becoming the Dark One and so he getting magical knowledge is after Milan disappears. So then he would have this little relationship with Cora after
all this happens. But in this case, it almost seemed as if Cora was manipulating Mr. Gold. She took the initiative. So perhaps in their former relationship, there was something of a revolt of the apprentice against the master or something like that. And that was the cause of their breakup. Or perhaps this could be a spin. Again, I'm trying to, it's going in all directions, but could there be an episode where they will bring in the story of the Sorcerer's Apprentice? Where she is the Sorcerer's Apprentice and Gold is the sorcerer?
Could be.
This could also be a nod to the whole Star Wars ringtone where they have a Sith apprentice in the map.
Who knows?
I thought of that too, David. I thought of that too.
Especially because you used the word master, which is a very Star Warsian term. Anyway, let's go back to Rumpelstiltskin making an appearance in the black and white world of Dr. Frankenstein.
Your land has witchcraft,
but it's feeble, neglected stuff.
Where I live, it's strong and hearty, but it cannot restore life. If you can do this, I want to know more and I'm willing to pay.
Money, yours.
Are you a philanthropist?
Well, I've been called worse. There is a cost to you. Knowledge. You teach me to wield whatever it is you wield. That is the deal.
Then it's a deal.
Magic and science. Rumpelstiltskin appearing in the 1930s world of Dr. Frankenstein, trying to get a handle on this other power, the power of science that apparently can do more with life than magic can, and lots of references, of course, to the Frankenstein movie from the 30s. Of course, Victor. By the way, the name Victor means, of course, the one who conquers. And if, well, it's quite obvious what he's trying to conquer, death. His father is called Alphonse. This is straight from the story itself, from the original story. But what I thought was brilliant, what they did with it, is that in this version of the Frankenstein myth, Alphonse is the head of a military family, and Gerhard is also seems to be a kind of a military son. The name Alphonse means ready for battle. So it does kind of, his name implies that it is a name for someone who's in the military. And Gerhard, his, well, most beloved son, at least in the beginning, means hard as a spear, or strong as a spear.
Or brave spearman.
Yeah. So again, a very military term. And then, of course, we've got Victor's assistant, Igor, who is, and that's kind of a staple from the 1930s horror movies. Igor appears in as a hunchbacked lab assistant in the Frankenstein movie, and then continues to appear, or at least a lot of the assistants of mad scientists are called Igor and are hunchbacks. In this case, he's just bald and scary, but that's about it. So a lot of homages here to the horror films of Universal Studios in the 1930s. I thought they did a great job visually. Very
nice. Igor, Igor means, of course, hero in Slavic.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So but why is Rumpelstiltskin there? What is his true goal? I mean, what is he after?
He wants to be able to bring back the dead, I guess. I mean, well, duh, but...
sure, but who does he want... I mean, he needs that power for something.
Well, I was wondering if... I was just wondering if, you know, if as far as bringing back the dead, you know, maybe this is just some kind of off-to-the-side thing as far as his search for Bay, because it's, you know, his search for Bay is taking years and years and years, and by the time he gets to Bay, he might be dead, so maybe he might want to be able to bring him back. I don't know, I'm just...
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was thinking the story where Will is introduced as being Dr. Frankenstein, and that Regina is shows that the one thing she can be manipulated with is bringing back her dead fiancé. So if Rumpelstiltskin would be able to bring back the fiancé after showing that Dr. Frankenstein can do it, then he has Regina totally in his power. So that's what I thought that would be the motivation to learn and that skill. But
well,
maybe
Regina
totally
was,
crazy.
Regina was learning magic to bring back Daniel. And that's what she ultimately tells Rumpel. She doesn't want to learn the evil half of the magic. She's altruistic. She wants to do it to bring back her love. And he's got to break her of that. And so he goes and he finds Victor and brings him back and tells him to put on a little show. And we've already seen this episode. He breaks Regina of the idea. He doesn't actually think that Victor can do it. Because remember, he's surprised later on. You were successful. You actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
I think for him, Victor was just something he heard about, and it was a means to an end to break Regina to the point that she would be ruthless and evil and in so much pain that she would be willing to kill anyone and anything to get what she wanted, which in turn would lead to what Rumpel wants.
That sounds logical. That makes sense.
Now, what motivates Victor? He wants to be altruistic too. He wants the name Frankenstein to stand for life, life everlasting. He is trying to cheat death to... But all this work is being done before his brother is shot. So it's clearly a passion of his.
Yes, and it's
he's also referencing his mother. So his father lost his wife, mm-hmm. and he could barely live with it.
Yes.
And maybe that's also a motivation for Victor to do this research, to bring back his mom maybe. So
that's good.
to heal, very well to be heal that his father's hurts.
He was traumatized, and he tries to have power over life and death in order to not get hurt anymore.
Yeah, I also get the idea that Gerhard, that's the favorite son, and yes. that he's kind of in a competition. So he cannot, mm-hmm. he may not be very good in military, but if he can bring back his mom, his father's through love, maybe, then he would be maybe the son, the first son.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely some of that kind of almost biblical rivalry between the two brothers, even though they also seem to love each other quite a bit. But it's this kind of like competing for their father's favor. And the father is a real jerk. <It's> really, man, oh, I can't believe
he plays
it.
A jerk in a lot of shows. I recognized him as Henry in Covert Affairs.
Oh, really?
Also was on 24 as the not very nice president.
Oh, jeez. No, he's terrible. And what a terrible father. I guess it's a bit the cliche of you know, a tough military dad who only, you know, has real esteem for children that are like him, and so in a way Victor is kind of not exactly what he wanted. You know, what's the use of science? And even and then Victor is constantly trying to prove himself, and even when he does, ultimately it's not enough. And so that's why he is so cold-blooded when the monster kills his father. It's like, good riddance, you know. He wasn't able to get his love anyway.
Victor was the older son, and Gerhard was the younger, but Gerhard received the gift that should have gone to the older brother. He received the watch from the mother. Oh. It was her father's, and she wanted to keep it in the family.
Yeah.
And Victor's clearly disappointed.
Yes.
As firstborn, he should have received it. And Gerhard tells him later, it should have been yours as the eldest.
Wow.
Tries to give it to him. She wanted it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. That does sound very biblical.
Yeah. Well, growing up around a military base, I gotta say I've seen you know, some of that where just, you know, if the son, if one son doesn't follow in the father's footsteps, then it's, you know, the relationship is really, really, really strained.
Jeez. Well, anyway, it's a very tragic story, and I really like that we saw, you know, both sides of Dr. Whale for the first time. I mean, he's always been a bit of an enigma, a bit self-destructive, kind of a tragic character who does tragic things like drinking and trying to, you know, smooch every girl in town. And he's like, what? Why? You know, why do you live like that? And we discover here that actually it all started off with, I think, a huge ideal of being the one who brings life, and who can conquer death. And in instead of actually doing that, just tinkering with life and death becomes his demise, and seems to only result in more pain and more tragedy.
Doesn't he say that at one point, that every time I try to bring one back from the dead, someone else dies?
Every time I try to save a life, someone else dies.
Yeah.
So well, it's almost as
magic has a price. It seems that science does too.
Well, yeah, and isn't that said actually, literally in the episode? Like, science also comes with a price.
Wait.
Okay, we have a clip. Let's see. Here it is.
Rumpelstiltskin says that magic has a price, but from where I'm sitting, it seems that science does too. Every time I try to save a life, someone else dies.
Hey, yeah. Look, you're Frankenstein. And I'm the werewolf. I ate my boyfriend. Regina thought she was punishing us by erasing who we were, but I think she underestimated how much crap we wanted to forget.
Yeah.
But we can't let it stop us. She gave us a chance to start over, and I want to take it. I think you should, too.
By the way, that's another reference to a classic 1930s horror movie, Dr. Frankenstein and the Werewolf. So that's pretty cool.
I love that moment between them. I you know, I love that it was Ruby that went after him, because you saw that they had so much in common with not wanting to face their stories and who they are. And like she said, mm-hmm. to forget all their crap. I just thought that was a really good moment of all the people to go after her. And it gives Ruby something to do. Yeah. You know?
And it also shows that she's more than, she's a lot more than just, well, I mean, even when she's not a werewolf, full werewolf, she can move. She's pretty strong.
Oh, yeah. She was there in a second.
So that could be interesting. Even when the moon's not full, don't tick her off.
And there's that one little nod again to the theme this whole second half of the season, the chance to start over. Can you be redeemed?
Yes. And Will wonders about that, and Ruby wonders about that, and even Cora and Regina. In their discussion, it's the same theme. It's, will you give me another chance? And Regina is like, well, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. But then again, she herself got a second chance, and it didn't work out the way she hoped it would. But perhaps it will in the end. I'm still hoping for happy endings for all of these characters. Most of them, that is. But I really like this is a very big theme that they're kind of referencing here. The science comes with a price, and tinkering with life and death, or trying to control it, or trying to control what should be out of your control, is very dangerous and can bring about a lot of pain. I think that's one of the big problems. It's like having to face your inability to control ultimately the fate of others and the life of others. It's the pain that you see in Mr. Gold's eyes when he's at the hospital, and he's got the little chipped cup that he brings to Belle, and it was a heartbreaking scene. She smashes it. And it's a symbol of actually the life of their relationship being completely broken, and probably, you know, there's no happy end there. There's no way to heal it anymore.
Tell me you didn't see that coming, though, her throwing the cup.
Yeah, there was a lot of...
the minute he handed it to her, I'm like...
A bit too much fighting there.
Like,
I felt
bad.
So bad that he showed it to her, and I thought, no, not right now. She's going to destroy it.
Well,
like giving a very fragile artifact to someone who's emotionally fragile. Like, this is not good.
Yeah, not a good idea.
But it was a great scene. It was great...
Until he said it was magic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
true. But I have to give Belle credit, because if you lose your memory and you don't know about anything about Storybrooke, and there's this dude you don't know sitting at your bed, I enchanted it. It's magic.
Yes.
You just go away, you creep.
Well,
and
it's the same creep who just kissed you. Yes.
Yeah. He's a little freaky, yeah.
He's not the type of guy someone falls in love with right away, right?
It's all good, right?
But and that brings us to another interesting question. How do you think that this relationship between Rumpelstiltskin and Belle is going to evolve? Is there something, you know, is this going to be a happy end, or was this just something that was necessary to happen so that Rumpelstiltskin could go out could go after, you know, his other big love of his life, which is his son? I mean, as long as Belle is in the way, as it were, Rumpelstiltskin can't really leave, and so perhaps there had to be this destruction of their relationship so they can tell the story of him and on this quest for his son.
And Cora set that up too. Because in the very beginning of our podcast, Father, you said that Hook was trying to kill Rumpelstiltskin or Gold. I don't think he was trying to kill Gold at all. He was trying to hurt him. He said when he was doing the interview with Emma, he said, I did quality damage to my foe.
That's true.
And she says, you hurt Belle. And he says, I hurt his heart. Mm-hmm. Belle is just where he keeps it.
Yeah, you're right.
So I loved Emma's response to that. About... taking bets on who she's, you know, talking to a dead man or something.
Yes,
you're chained down. He's on his feet. He's immortal. He has magic. And you hurt his girl. If I had to pick dead guy of the year, I'm looking at you, bud.
I love that line.
There were some good lines.
Do you learn those lines by heart?
Oh, she's, you know what? Ask her sometime. Next time we're all in person, ask her to recite Star Wars 2. If it's time,
wow.
She could recite the whole movie. Seriously, wow. It's kind of embarrassing for you, Shel.
Thank you.
She's always had the ability to do that.
Your husband is nodding right now, I know. So. No, Father, I type notes, and I go back and I type the lines when I hear a line that I know I'm going to want to say on the podcast.
I'm nodding. Sure you do.
Now you break the magic. Well, it better safe than sorry. You might step over a red line on the ground and forget, so it's better to write it all down. It's too bad that Belle didn't keep a personal blog. You know, she could have just go back to her Tumblr blog and read all about her relationship with this creepy guy.
You know, though, you've got a point, though. Belle without her memory and Gold about to leave, it could set up a really good opportunity for them, because with Gold gone, she's going to be interacting with who? Snow, Charming, Ruby, Granny. She's going to be reintroduced to her life as much as she had one, the library. And she'll be able to kind of pull together an identity for herself while Gold and Emma are off doing whatever they're doing, mm-hmm. looking for Bay.
I think they're going to bring one of these guys back to town, August or somebody, and somebody's going to romance her while he's gone.
Well, that's possible too, but what I'm saying is it'll allow her to find herself or rediscover or create a new sense of self without him always there
exactly.
in her face trying
exactly.
to... Yeah.
And I remember that a couple of episodes ago we were complaining, or I was complaining about that relationship. That actually, Belle, you know, why is she there? It's not advancing the story. She's kind of a, you know, she has played her role. She loves Mr. Gold, despite the fact that he's actually a very evil person, and that's it. And it's like, so what now? Well, this is a major twist, and I think that she's going to be important for the future, because let's talk about that final part of the episode when Rumpel decides to cash in his deal with Emma.
Gold, we've all had a long night.
You remember that favor you owe me, yeah. Miss Swan?
Yeah.
I'm cashing it in.
It's not a good...
You do honor your agreements, don't you? I need to find someone. So we're leaving today. Pack a bag.
Leaving?
Where?
Wait, find someone. Who?
My son. Oh, and we have a long history. So know this and know it to be true. If any harm comes to Belle while I'm gone, I'm killing all of you. I'll see you at noon.
Now, of course, that cannot be in this episode unless something is going to happen to Belle, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
And the question, of course, is what? You know, if it could be that she's in danger, although she's already had her purgatory in that psych ward for I don't know how many years. So, but it could also be that if once Mr. Gold returns, that she is given her heart to someone else, and that's going to be, you know,
like Hook.
Hook.
Yeah. Oh, I hope not.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh gosh, what if he? Yeah.
Interesting.
I like that. Wouldn't that be a horrible twist? What better way to get back at Rumpel?
Yes.
Than for Hook to get in good with Belle.
We're onto something.
It's much better at flirting with ladies than Gold is. So.
Oh yeah. Oh no. He could win her over. That's what I'm saying. He could completely romance her and convince her that, you know, all this, and all the meanwhile doing it to get back at Rumpel.
Especially because Belle probably still has her. I mean, she doesn't have her memory, but she still has her character, which is very caring, very warm. And Hook is there. The poor man. I mean, he's broken
chained
his
to
ribs and
broken
chained,
ribs.
Yeah. Misunderstood, left alone by everyone. Poor little crocodile.
And I noticed he had a fresher looking face in the hospital room, almost like they washed off some of that eye makeup. He didn't look quite as hooky. He looked a little more vulnerable.
Well, that's what they do in hospitals, right? They wash you. He probably didn't. He hadn't had a bath for many centuries.
Can I get someone to run down and buy him some more guyliner? Get that off.
But I think that you're onto something. That could totally happen. That Hook is going to charm Belle, and that when Mr. Gold returns, with or without his son, his heart is going to be broken, or he's going to, you know, his wrath is going to be terrible.
And perhaps even Cora might play a role in this, because she announced to Regina that she has a number of things up her sleeve, so she might be involved in this as well. You know, or perhaps that thing that she had up her sleeve was this wild goose chase that she sends Mr. Gold on.
So really, really want to know what Cora's motivation is. Yes. What she's up to.
She's bad.
She's definitely
bad.
No,
they don't write just bad characters.
I know.
I mean, look, we thought Gold was just bad. We thought Regina was just bad.
Yeah, but...
And then
but,
they unfolded all these layers of hurt and pain that caused them to...
Of course.
And then they started their whole...
Of course.
...trip towards redemption. And now we're at Cora. Same thing. Ooh.
So you're predicting that eventually we're going to find out that Cora's just poor, misunderstood, and had a rough life, and someone else is going to be worse than she is.
No, the pain. I want to know what was the pain that caused her to become evil.
They just keep setting themselves up for more seasons this way.
Is she mommy dearest? She told Regina, I shouldn't have made you marry the king. I love you. I just didn't show it the very best way.
Yeah, but this is way too early for her to have real tears of regret. If there is a conversion in her life and a redemption, then it's not at this point. That would be way too easy and too underplayed. I mean, she is right now
the
most evil character.
Well, she's evil. Yeah. She wants power.
Well, then her redemption should be on the same level as her fall from grace, you know? So I guess this is going to be something more for the end of the episode, the end of the season or something. But right now, I am pretty sure she's playing Regina. Regina is broken. What I keep hoping is that Regina will be strong enough somehow. And I think perhaps Henry might also play a role in this, because Henry kept believing in Regina. Something that was clear even to Cora. She kind of reenacts that disguised as Henry. But I feel that they need to bring back Henry to the story. We only saw him for a couple of minutes in this episode. Now I don't know what's going on. If it's because the actor has to go to school or I don't know. But he was one of the main characters of season one, and in season two he hardly plays a role, and I feel that he's always been the messianic savior type character or the archetype, and so I guess that he should be the one who saves Regina from Cora, or protects Regina. That's what I hope will happen. Speaking of the future, let us now take our magic crystal ball. Let me prick my finger here and spread some blood on this thing and warn our listeners that we are now going into, you know, mild spoiler territory, because we're going to play the sound of the promo for episode number 13 of season 2. So if you don't want to be spoiled at all, then please stop the recording, but not before I ask Shelley and Lisa about their blog. Can you mention it one more time, where people can find you?
Sure, we're at www.soundmindandspirit.com.
Soundmindandspirit.com. Deborah, your podcast, iPilgrim, tell us about it.
Oh, it's just a podcast I've been doing now for 2 years about... the Camino de Santiago, and we're kind of branching out this year, which is kind of exciting, and doing some other pilgrimages here in North America. So we'll be covering that in the coming months.
Very cool. What's the address of the show?
Oh, it's ipilgrimpodcast.com.
Excellent. David, we were doing a show about Tintin, and which was very successful. A lot of people were interested in it, and we somehow got caught up in all sorts of other things of life. But it's still there, so if people want to check it out, go to tintin.sqpn.com. And how many albums did we actually cover?
I think we covered it 3 or 4. I'd have to go back, but I think we got past through Tintin in America, and we were on. Yeah,
I think we were about to do the Lotus, the Blue Lotus.
Yes, the Blue Lotus was the one we were about to do.
Okay, so. Well, it's one of the things that I've put back on the planning for this year to restart The Secrets of Tintin, and I don't know how many albums we still have ahead of us.
We still have a fair number, and we can always review the actual Spielberg movie too.
Yes.
That's so a lot of projects for Tintin and for the both of us ahead of us. And Inge, you are my co-host on Secrets of Middle-Earth and Secrets of the Hobbit. We're right after this episode, actually, we're going to record the final part of our very in-depth review of the first Hobbit movie, The Unexpected Journey. And you've seen the movie once, right?
Yeah, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Oh, wait. It's another story.
Thank you for that Star Wars reference. So people can hear that third part of the review at thehobbit.sqpn.com. Thehobbit.sqpn.com. And on sqpn.com, you can find all our other shows. So for those of you that don't want to be spoiled, see you next time. It's in a few weeks from now. But we will be back with a thorough analysis and a very chaotic analysis, as usual, of that episode. And right now, we're going to listen to the sound of the promo of episode 13.
Run! This giant's tale is far from done. 3 weeks from tonight, he's back.
That witch, she made me small.
With a huge grudge.
I hear you're in town to kill someone. I can help.
Plus, cross the line into the real world.
We're gonna find my son.
And be prepared for some of the biggest changes of the season. Once Upon a Time, all new Sunday, February 10th on ABC.
Okay. Very brief glimpse of what's going to happen in a few weeks from now. I'm just going to, because we're running out of time, I'm just going to make the rounds of, you know, just give me one prediction about what you think is going to happen to the story. Let me start with Deborah.
I think we're going to see Neil again. Mm. I think that's where they're going to end up. And I was looking at that. It's been a while since I've actually seen the preview, but it seemed like Emma is the guide for Gold in the yes. outside world, because he seemed a little unsure of the outside world.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything about airport security, etc.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
No, you get to take your shoes off. Why?
Oh, man, really?
You don't want me to take my shoes off? It's more powerful than magic.
What do you have in your pockets? Oh, man.
No.
Check your enchanted dagger, sir.
Yes. Right. Yes. Sorry, sir, you have to remove all gold items.
No!
Yeah, we need to check that dagger in your carry-on luggage. Thank you. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to lead right back to Neil, and it's all going to be like, you know, Neil is the son of Henry, the father of Henry is going to be like this whole thing we all kind of see coming anyway.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Inge, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, when you were talking about a deck, it clicked in my brain. I was like, of course, next week, of next time, we will see why Cora sent Mr. Gold out of town, so she has free range looking for that dagger to control him. So and something with the giant, which is not very giant anymore. But yeah,
interesting. Shelley, why do you think they bring the giant back?
I don't know. They're going to bring him into. I guess they're going to bring him into Storybrooke, but I'm kind of interested in the backstory because they alluded to the whole Jack and the Beanstalk, Jack the Giant Killer. Mm-hmm. Before and knowing the writers here, there's going to be a twist to that. Something's going to be different, and it's got to involve more than just Jack. It's going to overlap with somebody else we know.
I know.
Okay, Lisa, tell me.
Well, I've already looked ahead a little bit, so I can tell you there is going to be a twist with Jack because of who mm-hmm. they cast for Jack. And if mm-hmm. you just Google that, it's a woman.
Yeah.
What?
It's a woman.
Jack's a woman, yeah.
Jacqueline?
Well, Jack. It says Jack, and it's a woman. I'm just saying.
That's brilliant.
And evidently, the crossover story is going to be with Prince Charming. And so that, to me, I'm interested to see how they make that work.
Which one? The Prince Charming, the shepherd, or the Prince Charming, the
I don't know.
Twin that was killed?
That's a good point. No, well, it can't be the twin, because he wasn't charming. Snow called him charming.
Yeah,
it didn't say whatever his actual name is.
David.
No, the actual
James.
No, it said Prince Charming. So I'm going to assume it's going to be our Prince Charming. I think that'll be interesting. They've got some interesting casting for the next couple of episodes of well-known people, which I kind of like when they do that. It makes it interesting. So we've got a Downton Abbey crossover coming up.
Wow.
You're kidding.
No, Miss Pottermore.
Amazing.
What is she going to play in?
They haven't said, but it's kind of fun. We're going to meet Snow's mom.
Yeah. I saw gorgeous pictures.
She's a pretty well-known actress, so it's nice. Rita Sofa. So anyway, I love it. I can't predict, you know, because I predict wild and it never comes true.
David, what are your wild predictions for next time?
Based on the TS on that whole TSA incident with Rumpelstiltskin, I would just see something crazy happening due to the culture shock and them both of them getting, you know, thrown in jail or something like that.
Well, Emma has a lot of experience.
Yes. So. Well, she's still an official, right? She's a sheriff, so she can probably wait, him out.
How is he going to get documentation to fly in the United States?
Exactly.
He'll just conjure it up.
Forged. And how about, isn't Neil a kind of a lawyer? So that would be funny that Neil would turn up as the lawyer.
Oh, wait a minute. Technically, Gold was technically a lawyer, too.
That's true.
That's true.
I forgot about that.
Interesting. Well, we will discover next time when we'll be back with another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. I want to thank our listeners for joining us again. Thank you for your support and for your feedback. You can reach us by sending your email to onceuponatime@sqpn.com. And our website is also onceuponatime.sqpn.com. See you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.